the rise and fall of an empire.
What's up, ladies and gentlemen? Mike Kermode here with Darren Prasad, and welcome to another episode of Canucks Mafia.
What's going on, everybody? Canucks Mafia, episode 56. Man, Mike, how are you?
I'm pretty good, man. I'm pretty good. I'm happy to be recording. You know, we haven't talked about the Horvat trade yet. Obviously, that's the big story in Canuck land. And we'll dive into that and obviously a few other things as well. But it's always nice to have kind of big news and an actual kind of important topic to discuss.
Absolutely. It's crazy because, like, I feel like the Canucks have been involved in almost every trade of significance this year. Like, there haven't been a lot of them, but like the Jason Dickinson deal, not that that's obviously on the same level, but like it's at least an NHL player being moved, the Ethan Bear trade, now obviously Bo Horvat. There haven't been a lot of trades this season at all, like across the league. So yeah, I mean, but like you said, that's the big story. And so once again, I'm sure everybody's heard it, but you know, it's Bo Horvat heading to Long Island for Anthony Beauvillier, Atu Ratu, and a conditional first. So yeah, just overall thoughts on the deal and what sticks out for you?
Well, it's kind of exciting. Like, when was the last time we traded off a guy and got this kind of a package, right? Like kind of a futures oriented package. So it's been something that we've talked about for a long time. I think the majority of Canucks fans have been wanting and expecting a trade like this for a long time, right? This goes back to losing Markstrom for nothing and losing Toffoli for nothing and losing Tanev for nothing and then not trading JT Miller and re-signing him, right? Like, the Canucks have not had a deal like this in a long, long time. So it's actually quite exciting. It shows that this management has a sniff of an idea. Like, it's concerning to me that they did have a long-term offer out to Bo, meaning like perhaps their priority was to just re-sign Bo. But we won't even bother with that because the reality is he got dealt. Acquiring a first round pick, like, legitimately, I can't think of the last time that happened. maybe going back to, I actually don't know. I should have done my research. When was the last time the Canucks traded for a first round pick?
Would it funnily enough be the Corey Schneider for Bo trade? Would it be that? But like, probably. I mean, But your point is right. Like, regardless of when it is, I mean, it's been forever since the Canucks have done that. And I think, I think that's obviously the most attractive part of the return. I mean, it is a conditional first, meaning, if the Islanders, end up with a top 12 pick. It's interesting around this because there's been a lot of discussion on what the conditions are. I was reading along the lines of some reporting around, apparently Lou Lamoriello described it as an option, meaning that if it's a top 12 pick, it doesn't automatically go to next year. The Islanders would have the option of saying, it kicks to next year and then it's unprotected, which we can get into all sorts of interesting, spicy scenarios there. Or look, what if it's the 12th pick and, you know, they look at, you know, all these teams ahead of them and then they look at the draft board and say, you know what, maybe giving up the 12th pick this year isn't actually that bad. Maybe they choose to do that rather than a pick that could be a fifth overall or not that this would ever happen for the Vancouver Canucks, but potentially a top three pick or God forbid a first overall. So yeah, there's a little bit of muddy water on that. I don't know exactly what's going on there, but regardless, I mean, I think when they made the deal, as it stood, like, you know, let's say the season ended today and the Islanders were where they were, and then the Canucks were where they were. I mean, the Canucks would hold like the sixth or seventh pick overall and the 13th or 14th or something. So, I mean, you take that. It's a deep draft. I agree with you. The fact that they made a trade, you know, purely for futures. Like, I mean, if, you know, I mean, Atu Ratu, you say what you want about him. I think he's an interesting prospect. I mean, he's a center. Whether he right now, whether he sticks as a center in the NHL, I mean, we'll see. But you know, I mean, he's 20, so he's not a win now piece. Anthony Beauvillier, I think, is obviously, I think he's 25 or 26. I don't envision him as like part of the Canucks' future, obviously, but I just think with the lack of trades we've seen all year, and the lack of cap space, I mean, I think like any team that you traded Bo to, realistically, I think you would have had to take, you would have either had to retain even more than the Canucks did, or you would have had to, I think teams would have want to send some money back. So yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think the first is the biggest part of that deal for sure.
Yeah, it is. And it's, you know, I think almost an ideal scenario is the Islanders just get the 13th overall pick and we get that, right? And then, you know, you get two picks in the top 13 in a really deep draft and a really good draft year. You know, that's enough to instantly, those two guys probably become our top two prospects in the system. Actually, not even probably, like, certainly.
I'd say certainly. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's so huge. And this is why, like, when fans or media or even like management talk about a rebuild, taking, like, fans don't have the patience for a rebuild, it shouldn't take that long. Like, if you go back 2 years and you don't do that OEL Garland trade, right, you ride out the year with the shitty contracts of Erickson, Beagle, Roussel, and you're going to be a shitty team, so you're going to get a good pick once again, right? So right there, now you have Dylan Gunther, you have whoever you get for probably a top 10 pick in last year's draft, because your team was worse than the 15th overall at the end of that picking. You don't have the money of OEL on the books. You don't have the money of Garland on the books. You trade off JT Miller for a package similar to Horvat. So you get a first round pick and a prospect. All of a sudden, you've got 5-6 primo prospects in your cupboard, right?
And cap space, which is
and like... cap space, which is so huge these days. Like, it's such a valuable weapon. But we won't go into hindsight. But yeah, so the top 12 protected pick, I like that, right? I think it's fine. I think ideal world, there's no restrictions on it, but whatever. Even if it goes to next year, my only worry is if it goes to next year, who knows? The Islanders with Horvat could be a pretty good team. They could be a playoff team, and all of a sudden that picks in the 20s.
But I agree with you. I agree with you, but like, they're one like Sorokin injury away from... Like, I would say they're a Sorokin injury away from potentially being like a bottom 10 team. I mean, they're close to being like, they're not in the playoffs this year, right? And I agree with you, Bo will help. I think Bo's having a career year, and like you and I have talked about it, that we would both be pretty surprised if in February of next year Bo's got like 30 plus goals. I'd be pretty surprised. That doesn't mean I think like he's gonna fall off completely, but like I would be stunned. I mean, yeah, I mean, but look, I agree with you. I mean, the first is it's the best part of the deal, you know, by far. I'm here for the drama, like the absolute drama of it rolling into next year, and just Canucks fans just fall, like, we're all gonna be following the Islanders like so closely, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like, just the drama of that, I'm here for that.
But also, like, let's not forget, the Islanders are 2 points out of a wild card spot right now. And they got better. They just improved their team. So it's not out of the realm of possibilities that the Islanders make the playoffs this year. And then that pick is, you know, whatever, 18th, depending on if the Islanders go for a run. Like it could be like an 18th overall, or it could be a 22nd overall, or it could be. And in that case, obviously it's still a deep draft and you still take that. Like, I'm still happy with two first round picks in this year's draft, but there's a lot of chatter about, oh yeah, we're so excited for two high picks. Like, this might not be a high pick. We have to be prepared for that as well. Now also Atu Ratu, I like this kid. I remember kind of following him in the draft. I remember him sliding into the second round, and I thought that that was surprising. I remember watching him last summer at the World Juniors, and he was borderline dominant. He was a big body. Two things I remembered just from watching him was the puck control. Like, it was hard for players. Granted, they were junior level players, but it was hard for players to take the puck off him. He used his size to his advantage. He wasn't afraid to go to the net. He played relatively physical. He's a guy that I really like, and I think Atu Ratu could be, you know, that second line center for the Canucks in 5 years. So that's also another piece. The only thing that you do hope for, and when you're trading a guy like Horvat, is that you get a defense prospect, ideally a right-handed defenseman back. But I guess you can't be too picky. Beauvillier, to me, it's kind of a bad contract. I mean, the guy's never put up 40 points in the NHL. He's still only 25. I don't know how much room there is to grow. Keep in mind, too, how often do players come to the Canucks and suddenly do better? Right? Like, it's pretty rare. Usually they come to the Canucks and be worse. So I think Beauvillier is what he is. He's probably kind of like a third line scorer who you could put on power play two kind of thing. I'd like to see him make closer to 3 mil than the 4.25 that he's making for this year and next year. Long-term piece, probably not. I agree. Maybe a guy that you can look to flip and trade again, either this year or next year. Probably more likely next year at the deadline when he's a rental for a playoff team kind of thing, adding depth. But overall speaking, I'm quite happy with the deal.
Yeah.
As a Canucks fan, we've learned to expect the worst, and I don't think this was the worst. So it's, you know, when the bar's low, it's a good deal.
Yeah. I think, you know, in terms of Beauvillier, like, I think you stick him on a line with Elias Pettersson, and there's still about, 4 weeks or whatever there is to go, maybe just under that, to go to the deadline. See if you can get some better production out of him, and see if you can build some trade value, right? I don't think the return on an Anthony Beauvillier trade is ever going to be astronomical, considering he's not, you wouldn't consider him a young player. You wouldn't call him old, but he's kind of just, I mean, he's right in that 25, 26 wheelhouse. He's a winger. So he plays a position that currently at this time, I mean, just doesn't hold a lot of trade value, and he hasn't been incredibly productive so far this season. So I think you take all of that, and if you can build up his value a little bit, and I agree with you, I think it's much more likely that you get, you know, maybe you can get rid of him and turn him into a third round pick or a fourth round pick or something at next year's deadline. Maybe that's the goal. Or at the end of the day, it's not like you and I were talking about this offline. It's not like the Canucks are going to be good. I mean, this season's over. And I don't think anyone at this point, after they traded Bo Horvat and just watching them play this year, is expecting them to be a playoff team or, and that shouldn't be the focus for them next year anyways. I think they're going to be bad again. So, the rest of this deal, they're not going to be good. So the other option is just to let him play here and let his contract expire. And there you go. Right.
Yeah. I think, you know, based on kind of the messaging from management, like, I don't think they've brought in Beauvillier as a guy that they're expecting to flip. I think they think that he's that kind of 25-year-old who they think maybe has more potential, more to show. They've talked about wanting to add those players. They've talked about not wanting a full rebound. I fully expect, and I don't agree with it, but I fully expect the Canucks to try to make the playoffs tomorrow or next year. So I do think they see Beauvillier as a piece to that, but I, you know, I suspect that despite trying to make the playoffs next year, they won't. They won't be good enough. And then now they're sitting on a expiring UFA who they don't know if he's a part of the future and can maybe flip for a pick or something next year. But all in all, you know, Horvat 25% retained. The money this year doesn't matter. I don't care.
It's just cash. Yeah. One question I have for you is, look, I think judging this deal right now, I think it's fair to say, like, whether, you know, you have an initial like or dislike for the return. And I think that, is it like a 5-star maximum value, super shining top prospect return? I'd say no. But is it like at least a future looking and the deal where they got a 1st-round pick? I'd say yes. So I'm okay with that. But I think like judging this deal depends on, you know, what do they do with that 1st-round pick? Number one, like I was going to ask you and we can talk about this. Do the Canucks hold that 1st-round pick? Do they actually make 2 selections and next year's draft? Because look, with the track record of this ownership group, I hope I'm wrong, but I wouldn't call that a slam dunk, especially in the off season and especially on the draft floor leading up to the draft. I have concerns about that.
That's a fear for sure. It's a realistic fear.
So, you know, so there's that. And then the other thing is, in order to judge this deal, I think that we have to see what comes after, because I'm kind of surprised. And I was talking about this with you offline as well. I'm kind of surprised that there wasn't more of a win now slant to the return. I think they obviously did the right thing. I mean, you and I have all been saying forever, like a lot of fans think of the future, and this is more of a future oriented deal. But, you know, if they go on, and we'll get into some of the other guys, and they can get some. Nothing to the extent of what Bo Horvat was going to get you outside of maybe Demko, who we'll talk about. But if you can get some more futures out of like Besser, Demko, Shen, whatever, and they make those deals with the future in mind, I'm looking way more positively at this Bo Horvat deal, because I'm saying this was the beginning of them looking forward. But if they follow this Horvat deal up with, you know, some of these other decisions like re-signing Luke Shen, when you could flip him for like a 2nd-round pick and he has like some good value right now, then this deal is just kind of like one good thing. And then we're back to where we were before.
Absolutely. And I think, again, that's a fair worry for Canucks fans, right? Because we haven't seen this commitment to looking at the future. Right. And we haven't even heard it publicly. Like Rutherford has said straight up, like they're looking for that kind of 25-year-old player who they think can rebound on their squad. I think you're absolutely right. You know, if this is a one-off deal, then the overall direction is still in jeopardy. And I mean, when you look at the guys that the Canucks have to potentially trade, like, I don't think any team is taking Besser's contract and giving up a prospect for him, right? Like, that deal is going to be contingent on how much the Canucks are willing to retain, potentially who they get in return that kind of offsets some of Besser's money. Like, I think deals for guys like Besser and Garland, like, those are going to be deals where it's like, we're looking to shed some cap space in the future. And in the meantime, we may have to kind of even it out. So like a Besser for, you know, a $5 million player kind of thing for this year or next year. It's tough to say. Cap space is so limited across the league that, you know, Besser's making $6 million, and he's not producing like a $6 million player. And I don't think many teams are willing to take him on. Now, do I think Besser has more in the tank and more to give to produce? Absolutely. And I do think, just because of the player he is and because of like the classic Canucks luck that, you know, if we deal Besser, he goes on and becomes a perennial 30 goal guy wherever he goes. They utilize him properly. He's happier. He gets that fresh start, that in kind of an injection of new life, so to speak. But I don't think teams are out there saying, hey, like, we'll take on Besser and a $6 million for our fifth best prospect. I think it's going to be something. It's going to be something like, you need to take on this contract that we don't like, and we'll toss in a second or a third round pick or something. And here we are. We're at a point where we may have to take that, and we may have to accept that, and we may have to be kind of happy with that.
Yeah, and I think that's realistic. I think that the odds of moving Besser's entire salary without getting anything back, I mean, just financially, like just the reality of the NHL and the salary cap and where the league is today and how many teams are absolutely capped out, and the fact that there's term, you know, significant term left on his deal. I agree with you. I don't think that's possible. So yeah, I mean, you know, I think the Besser situation requires creativity, right? And I'm, you know, I just don't know whether this management group, because they haven't shown it yet, you know, small signs of it, of like dealing Hamonic for a third and then taking that third and getting Dermott, whatever. Like, I guess you could say that whether that was the right move or not, or you keep the third round pick, that's a different conversation. But I guess, like, in terms of creativity, yeah, I guess you give some points on that a little bit. But like, you know, you might have to flip a Luke Shen or, you know, one of these other guys that have some value, and then attach that asset to Brock Besser. And then, you know, you start looking at the teams that are near the floor, right? You start looking at the Arizonas and some of the other teams that are going to say, yeah, sure, we've got 15 mil or 20 mil in cap space. We'll take his whole freight, but we want a second round pick for something, right? Like, yeah. And that second round pick you get for maybe trading Luke Shen or something like that. So I think there's creativity that's going to need to be involved. You know, because there comes a point where, I mean, I think Besser's going to be moved. I think there's just, I agree with you. I don't think he's happy here. I think he can put on a brave face and say whatever he wants and, you know, put a smile on his face or whatever. But I get, just from his play, he doesn't look like a guy that's super motivated and super, he looks like he lacks a lot of energy. Right. And I'm trying to say that in not a way where I'm knocking his effort level, but I'm also kind of like, I see Besser like have the puck and then basically just like instantly look for someone to pass to, because he's just like, I don't want to like cut to the net or make a play or something.
Yeah.
Like,
and part of
that, like trying to get rid of the puck, right? Like,
part of that is because he doesn't have the foot speed though. Right. I think he knows like if he tries to skate the puck, that he's going to have a guy on his ass in a matter of seconds, whereas most guys can kind of create some space. And that's not the type of player Besser is. And that's why Besser, you need to set him up for his strengths, which is, you know, it was his shot. And I wonder, with his wrist issues and back issues, like, he doesn't just, I think we've talked about this before, he doesn't seem like a dangerous player anymore, right? And he's making 6.65. Like, when you're making 6.65, you got to be a pretty key contributor to a team, right? So I do think, you know, if you can play like Besser with Kaprizov, who can make things happen, draw defenders and find, and if Besser can kind of find open space and work on getting a shot off quickly, like, I think that's like a perfect match, right? And obviously the hometown Minnesota, Minnesota makes a lot of sense, except for the cap, their cap issues, right?
Yeah, they're heading into cap hell next year too with the buyouts and stuff. But I agree. I mean, I think what you said is true. I mean, I just have an issue seeing Besser struggle to get open as much as he used to. Like, what are the two things, what are the two like weapons that Besser has always had, you know, at his disposal when he's been effective? Like, number one has been obviously his shot, which arguably a lot of people would say is not as effective due to like injuries and things that have happened, right? But I still think he's got a shot. Like, I mean, he's got an NHL shot. And the other thing is finding scoring areas, right? Like, he did Sure, he scored some clean goals where, you know, he beat a goaltender clean on a nice snipe and all that kind of stuff, right? But he did score his fair share of goals, like right in front of the net and at the side of the net on the power play or at even strength or something like that. And there just hasn't been enough of that. But like, I agree with you, like, would a guy like, you know, Kaprizov, as an example, like, you know, help Brock? Yeah, but I could say the same about Elias Pettersson. And like, I mean, they haven't been given an opportunity to play together a ton. But I kind of feel like that's on Brock more than anybody because he just hasn't earned the trust of his coach to kind of get that opportunity. He's puzzling. He's very puzzling right now. I agree with you that Minnesota, for all those reasons, makes sense. But I would be surprised if he's still a Canuck after the trade deadline.
Yeah, I could see it maybe happening more in the summer, a deal like this, where teams, you know, have a better idea where their cap stands. But I also wouldn't be surprised if he was dealt at this deadline too. So, and I think that's a move that's best for everyone, right? I think he needs a fresh start as a player and as a person. I don't think, you know, I think as the Canucks, he doesn't really fit into that. What we see is like the next 3 or 4 years. Like, I think you really got to focus on who is going to be on this team in 4 years when we're ready to like potentially compete, you know, like, and that doesn't mean fighting for a wild card spot. That means beginning that journey to like a contending team. In 4 years, is Besser going to be that guy? Like, for me, I would say no. You know, he's going to be pushing 30 at that point. And I think that you just got to think about that. So yeah, I'd call up Minnesota. I'd ask about a guy like not because I want Marcus Foligno on my team, but salary wise, I think it makes sense. You know, Foligno makes 3.1 for the next 2 years. So you basically say, yo, you guys are taking on $3 million of salary for Besser and Foligno. And in the meantime, throw us a second or a third round pick for the difference in skill level. We ride out Foligno for the next couple of years. Foligno's a guy who's, you know, will stick up for teammates. He's physical. It's not going to make the Canucks a better team necessarily, but kind of a guy you want when you're in that middling transition to be physical, especially if you lose a guy like Luke Shen, right? The one guy for me who's extremely intriguing talking about potential trades is Demko, because there have been rumblings that he's maybe unhappy. I mean, I've literally seen it myself. He has family members liking tweets talking about the mishandling of Bruce Boudreau and stuff. It's pretty evident that Demko did not like that, the way that situation went. And a lot of these guys, like you hear Pettersson in interviews and stuff, like he sounds like a guy who's very guarded, probably feels like his time in Vancouver has been unsuccessful. He's frustrated. He wants to win. And I feel like Demko is the same way. And then you got to wonder about this, his injury, right? Like his injury is taking longer than his initial timeline suggested. We saw what happened with Pearson and that, like, I wonder if there's some medical misdiagnosis or issues in the whole Demko situation too, because he does seem a little rattled and a little pissed off. Now, Demko, number one goalie, clearly. I know he struggled a bit this year, but I don't think there's any doubt he's a number one goalie, probably top, call it 15 in the league, is safe. Reasonable contract, $5 million a year for another, I think another 3 years. 3 years after this year. He's a guy who should provide value, right? And you think about teams out there who could really use a Thatcher Demko, and there's a handful that come to mind. Buffalo being one. They're a young up and coming team who really their only question mark right now is kind of in net. Craig Anderson's their best goalie, is 41 years old. Pekka Luukkonen is, you know, kind of, I think he's 24, 25 now. He's just kind of getting his first taste in the NHL. His record's kind of good, but his numbers aren't great. Over 3 GAA, just over 900 save percentage. Like, I think that's a team you had Demko into the mix there. And that's a team who now is like, man, we're legitimately able to make the playoffs every year for the next 5 years and start competing. And you think about a return for a bona fide number one goalie, like you should be able to get a team's top goalie prospect, probably a first or a second round pick, and maybe another, like, I mean, even if you just start there, a team's best goalie prospect and a first round pick, like, fuck, I'm down.
Yeah.
I'm down for that. And then you hope that that goalie is ready in 4 or 5 years when the Canucks are ready to contend, right? So
or Cyloves. You've got Cyloves in the fold as well. And yeah. I think if you're trading Thatcher Demko, I think that to me clearly signals a look to the future, right? So to me it's the right move. I mean, we've seen it here, even with Thatcher Demko, and you can say what you want about his play this year, but his play last year was pretty excellent when he was healthy. And the Canucks still, I mean, they missed the playoffs. So, at the end of the day, like, I feel like if you keep Thatcher Demko and you've now traded Bo Horvat, like, you're not going to go out and just instantly replace Bo Horvat and become a better team, right? That's not, those kind of guys don't grow on trees. I'm not, once again, saying Bo's the perfect player, but like top six centers in the NHL that can produce and play that many minutes, like they don't grow on trees. Like, you're not going to go and easily find that player, right? Without paying, either overpaying in free agency. And I don't know if you've looked at the free agents next year, but I don't really see anybody that I would be super thrilled with overpaying for. And I don't think the Canucks should be looking at that anyways. That shouldn't be the focus. So I think in terms of trading Demko, if you know already that you're not going to be as good next year, and you're already bad this year, I think it comes down to a couple things. Like, number one, age and timeline, like you touched on. Like, you know, the Canucks are minimum 2, probably 3 or 4 years away from being, you know, a significant player in the NHL in terms of like contending and regularly trying to make the playoffs and grow and progress through that journey, like you said. So, you know, by the time you guys are doing that, the cost certainty and the control that you have on Demko, which is a great contract, probably Jim Benning's finest work, is gone. So, you know, I think you have to look at the timeline and say, and the other thing is, if you're looking to the future, like, Thatcher Demko doesn't help you tank. Like, keeping Thatcher Demko, the only thing that does is, if you're not making the playoffs, Thatcher Demko helps you get a 15th overall pick. That's what he does. That's what he's going to do here. I would imagine he gets back to form, right, once he's healthy. You know, so that doesn't help you. That just keeps you in the mushy middle, which we've been, how long have the Canucks been there for, right? So, yeah, I mean, I agree. In terms of for the Canucks, I think I'll have to believe it. I have to see it to believe it for this one, because, you know, ownership agreeing to dealing Thatcher Demko is a pretty significant step in the opposite direction of where they've been going. Like, it would be a complete reversal, you know what I mean, for the last 10 years. So I'm not convinced that it's going to happen. I think it's the right move. But I believe that Francesco is willing to do that. And the only way that I'll believe that is when I see it go down, if that happens.
That's why I think we're almost reliant on him wanting out, because I don't think ownership and management are at the stage where they're willing to give up on Demko. I don't think they're on the stage where they're willing to say, hey, look, we're aiming for 4 or 5 years from now. They should, we know that, but I just don't think they're there. So if I think the best case scenario for this franchise in a roundabout way is if Thatcher Demko does request a trade, and then we are actively finally trying to trade him. The worry about that is, you know,
he then becomes a distressed asset at that point.
Well, or they trade him for like a Marc-Andre Fleury or something, right? Like someone who they want, who they'll try to replace him as like a win now candidate. But I think absolutely. I don't think this management and this ownership is at the stage right now where they're looking to trade Demko because they're seeing this as a 4 or 5 year plan. I think that's pretty obvious based on what they've said. So I do think, you know, I think what we see happen with Luke Shen will be very telling about the direction of this team. There's been talk about re-signing him, and that would just listen. Luke Shen's a good player. We like Luke Shen. I'm happy to re-sign him in the offseason even, but he's not a guy that we should be re-signing now without trying to attain any kind of asset for him right now. Let the league know, you know, there's interest in him. We already know that. Start a bidding war. Calgary just talked about being interested in Luke Shen. If Calgary's offering you a third, you say, you go to other teams and you say, oh, Calgary's offering me a third. If you offer us a second right now, we'll take the deal. Like, he needs to get traded. And if they re-sign him before the deadline, that's 100% all I need to know, proof that management and ownership has not figured out the proper process here, and that we can expect more attempting to win now, spending to the cap, signing players in July 1st, like, which would be the absolute worst case scenario.
Yeah, I think, yeah, I mean, Luke Shen is 100% a guy that you have to trade. I fully agree. I would, like, if the Canucks were flush with young prospects and draft picks, like if they had spent the last couple years even accumulating some of those things, I would still trade Luke Shen. But would I be less harsh on them if they were to re-sign him? Yeah, I'd probably be less harsh on it, but I'd still criticize it. But like this is a team that just absolutely needs as many young assets and draft capital as they can possibly accumulate. You have somebody here who's on a great contract. Honestly, his play aside, the fact that his play is matched with a contract that literally every single one of the teams in the NHL could put under the cap right now, it just drives, like, the guy makes no money. And it completely adds so much value that it would be a complete misstep and such a terrible missed opportunity. I've heard these rumblings like, you know, Luke Shen's a Rick Tocchet guy and Rick Tocchet loves Luke Shen. Sure, but like, you can try and re-sign him in the offseason then. That's fine. Like, I don't have any issues with him coming back, but like, what is Luke Shen being here for the final 35 games or however many games left in the season going to accomplish? Like,
yeah,
at the end of the day, like, what is that going to provide? Like, you can, oh, he's going to provide leadership and blah, blah. Leadership for what? You're just going to lose leadership to help you beat, you know, the Chicago Blackhawks two more times because you play two more times in the year. Who cares? Who cares about any of those things? It doesn't matter. Like, and if you're going to try and say, oh, well, you know, Rick Tocchet wants to establish a culture and blah, 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 and Luke Shen's a culture and character guy. Look, if your culture and your character is tied to one player, I'm sorry, but you have bigger issues as an organization. And once again, I'm going to reiterate all the things you said. I like Luke Shen. I think he's one of the, you know, like one of the best people, it seems like, let alone, you know, teammates, but just a good all around person that you want in your organization. But like I said, this organization needs assets. They need them desperately. And you can't do both things. You can't say that you want to turn this around in a hurry in 2 years, but then give up a chance to get a second round pick or a third round pick. Even if you wanted to rush, even if you wanted to do the retool thing and be better in 2 years, the smart choice is to trade Luke Shen because you get a second round pick back that you can then help you go acquire somebody else that can help you in the win now. I'm not saying they should do that, but either way, whether you're looking future or you're trying to do this whole stupid retool thing that hasn't worked in a decade, it logically, it just doesn't make any sense. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, oh yeah, I was just going to say that makes a ton of sense. And I think it all comes down to communication, right? Like, but all signs point to Luke Shen wanting to stay in Vancouver. One of the few guys who seems to want to stay in Vancouver. So yeah, let's find a way to keep him. But you go to him and you say, look, like where we're at right now, this season's lost. Like, do you want to go try to win a cup somewhere again this year? And then in the summer, like, we want you back. And it sounds like you want to be back. You already start having those preliminary discussions with him and his agent. Say, you know, you're on a value contract. We'll pay you more than what you're getting paid right now. We're thinking 2 years. Would you go 2 years, a mil a piece for Shin? I would maybe. So you just say, you know, so let's do this. We're going to trade you off. We're going to trade you to a contender. You can even give us a list of 10 teams or something, and we won't trade you to any of those other teams, you promise. But let's trade you off, get an asset for you, and then come back this summer. Your family doesn't have to leave, you know, and we're gonna re-sign you. Like, you have our word, a 2 year, $950 a year or something.
A couple things with that. I agree with that. A couple things is apparently his wife is about to have a baby in the near future. And there's been some discussion around the Canucks trying to resolve this situation with Luke to be respectful of that. Right. So that they can, you know, not be in two different places in North America when that happens, obviously. So one encouraging thing for me is that what we heard earlier in the year was that management and Luke Shen's agent hadn't talked at all about an extension. Now that obviously could have changed in the last little while, but if you kind of read the tea leaves on this one, like you said, Shen wants to be here, right? Like, I think he wants to play in Vancouver for the next couple of years, maybe finish his career here. So that's one thing. The second thing is the Canucks like him. The organization likes the player. He's a character guy, blah, blah, blah. That's box number two. Box number three is he's not going to be expensive. He's not a $4 million, $3 million, $6 million player. He's going to come in around the $1 million mark, give or take a little bit, like you said. So the fact that all of those three things are true and he hasn't been re-signed yet, that's why I do believe that they are going to move on from him. I think that if he wanted to be here, he's cheap and the team likes him and his wife's about to have a baby in the near future. I think if they were, and look, they could re-sign him tomorrow. We, you know, whatever, things can change. But I'm just saying, from reading the tea leaves up until this point with Luke, I would be very surprised if they re-sign him. So we'll see how that situation goes. One other guy that has been talked about a little bit, interestingly, I'd like to spend a couple minutes on Jack Rathbone. Rick Dhaliwal on Donnie and Dolly mentioned earlier this week that it doesn't sound like the Canucks are shopping him, but it sounds like there's been some interest in Jack Rathbone. I would see him as a guy who hasn't really been given a super fair chance here in Vancouver. You know, I mean, he's had some games. He's like the preseason all-star. Like, he looks like the most NHL-ready top four defenseman in preseason. And then as soon as it's time to play real games, he either, you know, like, gets super sheltered minutes or has one bad game and then, like, he loses the trust of the coach and the organization. So, interesting to hear Jack Rathbone's name come up.
Well, yeah, like, I think one of the frustrating things as a Canucks fan is, like, who is Jack Rathbone? What is Jack Rathbone, right? Like, he was on the Canucks roster and sat in the press box for 17 straight games. And it's like, how is this doing him any good? The kid needs to play hockey, whether that's in Abbotsford or in Vancouver. At this point, the season's lost. Let's bring Rathbone up. Bring him up right now, right after this All-Star break. You don't need to we know what Corey Stillman is. We know what Kyle Burrows is. Not Corey Stillman, sorry, Riley Stillman. Like, we don't need to play these guys. They suck. We know what they are. Let's get Rathbone up here. Let's play him decent amount of minutes. If he screws up, let him screw up. Our season's over. Doesn't matter. Let's see what we got in this kid. Put him on the second unit power play. See if he can, you know, like, I want to see what Jack Rathbone is.
Even if you don't want to keep him, you could do that in an effort to, like, juice his trade value, right? Like, let him quarterback a second power play unit and see if he sinks or swims, right? Either way, you find out what you have. Well, and if it goes well, you can decide whether you keep him or you deal him.
the risk of that is if teams are interested in him now based off his AHL play, and he comes up and he looks like he's not an NHL ready guy. Teams may find.
Yeah, you can also tank his value too.
Exactly. Yeah, that's so true. Fair enough. So, yeah. but he's not a guy I want to trade. Like we have a offensive minded, call him Quinn Hughes light, like super light, right? But how is that a bad thing? We want this guy in our system. If you're me, I can't imagine a team saying, "Hey, we'll give you a second round pick for Jack Rathbone right now." Like, I think if you're going to trade Jack Rathbone, it's going to be for a mid round pick or like some,
or like another team's failing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So why? Let's see what we got in him. And same thing with Podkolzin and Hoglander. Like, I don't know. Is AHL the right place for them right now for development purposes? In a way, I don't think so. I don't think Podkolzin at all. I think Podkolzin's a guy. You at this point, the season's over. Give him a leash. Give him top 6 minutes and say, let's see what we got in this kid. Let's play him with good players and just try to bring out the best in him. You know, like would a Garland Miller Podkolzin line be that bad for the rest of the year? Like I just don't see the harm in it. They're playing Studnicka top 6 minutes right now. Like, let's see what we got in these kids, right? Give them a chance. Let them gain some confidence. Let them tell you as a management group, you talk to Rick Tocchet and you say, look, you're here for the next 2 years. That's our plan. This year's a wash. We're not, honestly, wins and losses don't really matter. I know you're going to go out and try to win every game, as we should, but we want to see what we got in Podkolzin. Play him top 6 minutes. Don't bench him if he fucks up. Like, and teach him. Take him under your wing. Teach him. You know? Let's see what we got in these kids. And if the last 30 games of the year, you realize, man, maybe they're not ready for the NHL, then next year you can think about starting them in the AHL and kind of restarting that developmental process. But I just don't see any value in sticking with guys like Jack Studnicka and Nils Amon over guys like Hoglander and Podkolzin and Rathbone. Like, Riley Stillman, sit for the rest of the year, demand a trade. We'll waive you in the offseason. Like, who cares?
Yeah, I agree. And Rutherford and Alvin did say that he would, they are expecting Podkolzin and Hoglander to be up at some point. So I agree with you. I think finishing the season in Vancouver and would make a lot of sense. And I think for Rick Tocchet to kind of have his own evaluation of those guys at the NHL level and see what they give you, right? Quickly before we wrap up, Mike, I wanted to quickly touch on the Super Bowl. So, you know, Kansas City, Philadelphia.
This is for our bet stamp betting segment.
Yeah, so what I wanted to do was talk about, first of all, the quarterback matchup. Probably one of the better QB matchups in terms of, like, entertainment value. Like, you know, Hurts and Mahomes going head-to-head. I mean, I don't know if you can ask for a more entertaining quarterback matchup. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know what you're thinking. But, you know, in terms of, you know, where I'm thinking to put some money down on this game here, I'm logged into BetStamp right now, and I'm scrolling through trying to find the best prices for where I think I can make some money. And I'm seeing that KC – I mean, I like Kansas City. Like, I'm an Eagles fan, but – If I'm being, you know, realistic, I think that Kansas City pulling for the upset is what I'm you know, kind of leaning towards. So, you know, if you want to place you know, a bet on KC pulling the upset, who are the underdogs right now, you can find the best odds, 2.08 actually at Pinnacle. So you can double your money, slightly more than double your money on an underdog, on a very, very talented underdog with Patrick Mahomes at quarterback. So that's what I'm looking at. KC, the underdog on the money line to beat the Eagles in the Super Bowl at Pinnacle, 2.08. And yeah, BetStamp hooking you up with the best price on where to make money on that bet.
Yeah, same thing. And, you know, that's why I like BetStamp, is you can find the best odds at for each bet that you want to play, right? It's the Trivago of sports betting. You go onto the site, you kind of figure out what you're looking to bet at, and it literally shows you each site's odds for that bet. So for me, I agree with you. KC as an underdog is what I'm looking at. Like I'm going with the best quarterback in the world and probably the best coach in the world. You put those two together and I just see I see a Kansas City win. So the fact that they're an underdog is helpful for the price, right? And I also think it's going to be a high scoring game. I think, both offenses have been strong all year. There's lots of weapons on each team. So I like the over on the 50.5. So looking up a parlay to parlay the Chiefs and the over, and the best odds I've found on BetStamp is through Pinnacle Sportsbook, and a total of +324 for that parlay. So my $20 bet's going to net me almost like over triple the money, $64.86. So that's what I'm going for this week's BetStamp bet. And
another little spicy one here. I always feel like in the Super Bowl, there's like one kind of unexpected guy that has a big game. Like I believe when it was the, you look at like the David Tyree makes a sick catch, and there's always these like unsung heroes. Look at Nick Foles having a big game when the Eagles won their Super Bowl. So an underrated play, I think, is Kadarius Toney for the Chiefs as an anytime touchdown scorer. I'm seeing prices like 2.85 at Plain LBC. Even you can get them at three. You could triple your money at Bet99. But the best price for a Kadarius Toney anytime touchdown score is at BWIN 3.6, which is a significant gain over some of the other prices that you're seeing here. So yeah. Anyways, check out the BetStamp app. We're going to talk a little bit more about the Super Bowl next week as well. We'll have some other picks and things as obviously Super Bowl Sunday gets closer. But Mike, it's been great. There's no shortage. I know we're heading into the All-Star weekend here, so we'll catch everybody once the All-Star festivities wrap up and everything. But thanks for listening, everybody.
Yeah, thanks for listening. And just a reminder for the BetStamp app, check it out either on online, on their website, or their app. And make sure you use the promo code Canucks Mafia if you do set up an account, which we highly recommend. It's a product that we believe in. You know, we've had lots of opportunities to work with other companies on here and have chose not to because, frankly, we only want to back and work with products that we support. So that's a big part of our reason for partnering up with BetStamp. So yeah, make sure you use promo code Canucks Mafia and check it out.